Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency for November 7th, 2023. And with that, I'd like to call the meeting to order and move on to item two, Pledge of Allegiance. Tonight, I would like to ask Kevin Strauss if you'd like to come to the podium and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Evening, and I would love to put your right hand over your heart and join with me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Strauss. Our announcements for tonight. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or reschedule, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom and you will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We do have members of the public present, and they are aware of the public comment cards in the lobby because they just got one. So that takes care of that announcement. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for the roll call votes. All directors are present for tonight's meeting. We will now move on to item three, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items that are listed on this agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board may do so at this time as well. I have a public comment card, but not for this item. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on item three online?
We do not.
Very good. We can move on to item four, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the November 7th, 2023 amended board agenda? Seeing none, the agenda is hereby approved. Item five, consent calendar. There are three items on the consent calendar tonight. Before I ask for a motion, do we have any public comment? I do have a comment on from 5.2 from Ms. Noltemeyer. So if you would like to come to the podium and make your comment on 5.2. And then we will consider comments online.
Cam Noltemeyer. Yes, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I saw a complete change after this very strange little meeting. And it was, as reported here, at 1 o'clock and adjourned at 4. My husband and I sat through that. Now, all it did was to make it very easy for developers. You could see that because immediately after this, this was all done in black. Now, I mean, they were away from you. You couldn't see what they were talking about. but I'm disturbed about one thing, that this was allowed, but since then, apparently whatever it brought forth is being held through. I go to every meeting, you know, and it reflects what I think is the bad part of what is going on now with this entire agenda and the way this basically said these things are going to be allowed, because we saw them happening. Things that had been denied all of a sudden started to happen. And because we follow this closely, it's kind of a hobby of ours. And I it destroyed all my confidence in this board and what you're doing, because you had to know that was happening. You know it's happening now. And the point is, you just approve everything. And I see what's happening. It's very disturbing, and it's not going to be good for the community. But I think there's one developer in this area that wants his property developed the way he wants. And it's that type of thing that I see being set up in the background. And I hate to see this kind of meeting being allowed, for one thing. You come in, no one's allowed to attend. You sit in there that long, and then you come out and say nothing. And it's something very, very wrong.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer.
Members of this board.
Mr. Baum, would you please explain to Ms. Noltemeyer why that particular item was covered in closed session, why it was appropriate and legal to do so?
Thank you. I have to refresh my recollection about what that was. Oh, the general manager's review, of course. That's, because the Brown Act allows the board to speak freely and in private in doing reviews of its executives. That's why it was appropriate.
Yeah. And that was the sole content of the meeting. So.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Do we have any public comment online?
We do not.
Very good. Then we can move on with the consideration of the consent calendar. Do we have a motion for approval of the consent calendar? A motion moved by Director Colley. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Vice President Ozakowski seconds. Do we have any public comment other than what we've taken?
We do not.
Very good. Any board discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll, Madam Secretary.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes, but I'd like to abstain from approval of 5.2 since I was not at the meeting.
Thank you. Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozakowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that includes resolution number SCV-392.
Very good. Thank you, Board. You can move to item 6. Action item for approval. We have one item 6.1, approve a contract with Waste Management Services to transport and dispose approximately 2,800 tons of treatment byproducts. An updated staff report was sent out last week and posted to the SCV Water website, and it is each of your spots. This item tonight, we have the honor of having Water System Supervisor Gil Hermosillo be the presenter tonight. Steve, you'd like to make any opening remarks?
Nope, Gil can take it away.
Thank you, President Martin, and good evening, Board. I'm here to talk about the transportation and disposal of 2,800 tons of surface water treatment byproduct. Next slide, please. So SCV Water Surface Water Treatment Operations, as part of SCV Water's commitment to delivering reliable, high-quality water, we operate two surface water treatment plants, part of the state water project that come from Castaic Lake. Next slide, please. We have one of our treatment plants is where we're currently at right now at Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant, and it has a above Central Park, and we have the capability of treating 66 MGD. And we have our Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant, which is next to Castaic Lake, and that treatment plant has the ability to treat 56 MGD. Next slide, please. Solids removal is the key treatment process accomplished by upflow contact clarifiers and deep mono media filters. The suspended solids and contaminants are removed. Removal is accomplished through chemical and mechanical processes. Next slide, please. So the way it's removed is we have contact clarifiers and filters. So we have 10 clarifiers at Earl Schmidt, and we have 12 clarifiers at Rio Vista. And a majority of the suspended solids and contaminants are removed in the contact clarifiers. The clarifiers are typically backwashed every 24 hours while they're in operation, and they generate approximately 800 pounds of treatment byproduct per day of operation. And in Earl Schmidt, we have 10 filters, and at Rio Vista, we have 12 filters, and they remove the remaining suspended solids and contaminants, and they're typically backwashed after 72 hours of operation, and they generate approximately 200 pounds of treatment byproduct per day during operation. Next slide, please. So here's some pictures of kind of the cycle of the byproduct. So the picture starting from the left is our upflow contact clarifiers. The next picture is during a backwash cycle, which the water gets reverses its flow and gets agitated, which removes the materials, the any of the byproduct. Then it goes into our wastewater basins. Then from the wastewater basins, they get drawn out, and any of the byproduct gets pushed into our dry embeds, which the water gets filtered through there, and the material gets accumulated there. Then ultimately gets removed from the dry embeds, and then ultimately would be disposed of. Next slide, please. The laboratory testing. Dry sludge is analyzed to determine if below or above the TDSC regulatory threshold limit, the TTLC. If sludge is above the TTLC, material must be disposed of at a hazardous waste landfill. If it's below the TTLC, a soluble threshold limit concentration must be performed to assess the leachability. If the STLC results are below the STLC, the material may be disposed at a local landfill. But if the results are above, toxicity characteristic leaching procedure, or a TCLIP, analyze is required to determine if the additional treatment is required before disposal at a hazardous waste landfill. Next slide, please. So here's our financial considerations for the removal of 2,800 tons. It is broken down into the disposal cost and the transportation and associated fees to remove the 2,800 tons. Next slide, please. The recommendation would be that staff recommends that the board of directors authorize the general manager in entering a contract with Waste Management Services to transport and dispose of 2,800 tons of filter byproduct in the amount of $380,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Gil, for the presentation. Excellent. I do not have any public comment cards. So, Madam Secretary, do we have anybody online who wishes to make public comment on this item?
We do not.
Very good. We can open up for board discussion, questions, and possible motion. Do we have any? Dr. Armitage.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for the presentation. Appreciate that. Two questions. One is, how did we go from 5,100 tons to 2,800 tons? And then secondly, is landfill disposal the only option for disposal? Is incineration an option? I'm not a sub. No. Okay. I'm seeing it's too
far. There's not, there is.
There's no incinerators in California. So okay. If you do incinerate stuff, it's trucked like even further. Halfway across the country.
Okay. Okay.
So I'll answer the first part. We reduced our quantities once we started actually moving the material. So it was stockpiled here at Rio Vista. And so once we started kind of moving it to get a better idea, we realized that we overestimated. And so we were able to actually tighten up our numbers to a true value.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Vice President Butsek.
I just wanted to comment, that was a great summary of the analytical process, spot on. Many places don't even get that right that have been doing it for many years. So you did a great job on the analytical, and I liked your presentation as well, the slides. One question, the written write-up says we only got one quote. Did this have to go through the public bid process, or were you just calling people? And if so, did we try places like, because Waste Management owns Kettleman City, but did we try any private independent like Clean Harbors or Amberwick or anybody else?
Thank you. Yes, we did reach out to a different landfill, and unfortunately they weren't able to take the hazardous waste once it was deemed hazardous waste.
No, my question is not the landfill, but the hauling. You can use independent haulers that might be cheaper. And so when you had one quote, I was wondering if you tried other trucking firms.
For this process, we just went all in with the Waste Management. They offered the trucking service as well. And it was a competitive price to what we've seen in the industry for the hauling portion of it.
Okay. All right. But that, yeah, there are independent haulers if you want to consider that in the future, that Thank haul you. Hazardous waste.
Any other questions? Director Peterson.
Gail, what's the percentage of moisture in the material you're going to move?
The percentage is pretty low. Material's pretty dry. It's been stockpiled here for a handful of years.
So, in the quote, then it can the condition of the material's moisture.
I don't have that on in front of me, Ken. Sorry.
All right. Just a comment about that is, in my previous experiences with hauling materials like that, moisture is a big issue with hauling costs. You don't want to haul a lot of water with it. But anyway, it sounds like it's been drying for a while. So, all right, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Looking around, I see no. So I would entertain a motion for approval of the item 6.1 recommendations from staff. Director Cooper. So moved. All right, we have a second. Director Peterson seconds. We have any no further discussion. Please call the roll, Madam Secretary.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item passes.
Thank you, Board. Thank you, Gil, for the presentation. We can move to item 7, Water Resources Integration Model Presentation. The presenter tonight is Senior Water Resources and Data Scientist Najwa. I won't try for the last name, but if you want to clarify it for me.
Pitwa.
That's okay. So, and Board, you're in for a treat. This is a very interesting presentation. Just pay attention and stay with her. It gets kind of technical. Right? So please, Najwa, proceed. Right.
Good evening, members of the board. So tonight I will be giving an update on the GoldSim model development, or what we call as well the reliability model. Next. The outline of today's presentation will begin with a brief background, followed by a description on the uses of the reliability model, then a presentation on new methodology that incorporates new strategies on how we manage our water supply portfolio. Next, I will present results of two scenarios to showcase the type of analysis we can do, and finally end with a summary and next steps. Next, please. So the board authorized an update to the prior reliability model, which was known as the MBK model, back in the spring of 2021. The reasons were that the agency needed improved functionality. The agency wanted to build in-house expertise and also wanted to have access to a new platform that is easier to update and maintain. So you can update it with new operational strategies or new input data and so on. Back in February of this year, I provided an update on the GoldSim development to the Water Resources and Watershed Committee. I showed the value of switching from an annual time step to a monthly time step. So the old model used annual time steps and this model uses monthly. And I provided an example of the analytical capabilities of the model using the Rosedale Rio Bravo take and put capacities. Today, I will be showing you how we programmed the model with a carryover Article 56 carryover storage, which is something that the Department of Water Resources doesn't simulate in its delivery capability report. That's a report published every 2 years that provides agencies with data on what would be the average deliveries of the state water project. So it allows us to do planning accordingly. I will also be showing a sample run examining how AVAC, the AVAC banking program, can be a potential program to participate in. So I will just show how the model can simulate this and how we can interpret the results. So as of now, we have a functional version of the reliability model that continues to be updated as new information becomes available or as we see the need to revise some of our operating assumptions. Next. Next. So the reliability model can be used for several purposes. We can assess the adequacy of the existing water resources portfolio to meet future demands, considering uncertainties and changing conditions. We can assess the value of new investments and compare options in a quantitative way. We can consider the investments in conjunction with new operating strategies for the entire portfolio of diverse supplies and programs. And we can assess the risk of interruptions to one or more supplies based on the resilience of the entire portfolio and range of responses available to SCB. So I just show a snapshot of what that user interface looks like on the right side. It's that we can move on. Also, as you know, SCB has a diverse supply portfolio of imported water and local groundwater and recycled water. Actions taken in our watershed, like pumping of groundwater for municipal water supply benefits, may also influence environmental flows in the Santa Clara River. So this Goldstein reliability model is one of a suite of tools we are using to assess the benefits of different actions or decisions we make regarding our water supply and watershed resources. Similarly, we have a habitat suitability model that was developed as part of the California Environmental Flows Framework. And that's another tool that allows us to see how groundwater pumping and other actions we take in the watershed can influence environmental flows in the Santa Clara River. So really what I'm showing here is that we're beginning to build a set of tools where we can assess the impact of our decisions on different resources within our watershed, as well as our water supply reliability. Next, please. Next. So this slide here shows the conceptual framework of the reliability model. We have inputs, which may include terms of water supply agreements and output of modeling projects, such as the groundwater operating profiles. We can input the demand forecast. So as we update this every few years, this data is not hard-coded. We can update it. We can update our recycled water projections. So all these become inputs into our reliability model. And then next, we have the model itself, which is the analytical engine. And that in that, we have our assumptions and strategies on how to use state water project supplies, how we use groundwater to provide supply to our demands, and then how we use our banking and exchange programs. And then the engine, the model itself calculates, for every monthly demand, how it's going to allocate supplies or store excess supplies. And then we get output in the form of distributions or probability curves and time series. And these can be further post-processed to provide implications of results and also inform us if our underlying assumptions make sense. So, we can look at supply surplus and projected supply shortfalls for a particular future demand year. So in summary, next, please. So we have input, next, the analytical engine, which is the rules of operation, and then the output, and next, please. And then, as I mentioned earlier, that it's not a one-way thing. As we look at our output, and if we see that something's not working ideally, that we could potentially improve on our supplies, we may go back and revise some of our assumptions. Next, please. So the way the model runs is by using multi-year sequences of wet and dry years. DWR requires us to produce an urban water management plan, and we have to state what our supplies and demands are. The analysis addresses variable hydrologic conditions and changing levels of development within the SCV service area over time. The model simulates how the portfolio is managed over multi-year sequences of wet and dry years. In the old delivery capability report, that was the last one was in 2021, that historical sequence went from 1922 through 2015. The next DCR for 2023 will actually extend that hydrology to 2021. Which is nice because it'll capture the last sequence of droughts. The model can use CalSim simulations relating to different assumptions of climate change, regulations, and future development of the state water project. And the model also simulates variability of local groundwater during wet and dry periods. And the simulations are performed over 30-year planning horizons, wherein demands in SCV increase and new investments are either brought online or existing programs are retired. Next. This slide here, I just want to summarize very simply in one time step, in a single time step, so in 1 month, how different ways the the model might operate. So I have two scenarios, scenario one on the left and scenario two on the right. And each one of these scenarios begins with a certain amount of what I'm calling here base supplies. Both scenarios also have access to storage. And in this case, we have the same storage capacity and same starting storage. Next. So assuming a certain demand, next. You can see in scenario one, the base supply is greater than our demand. Next. So we try to put excess water into storage. Next. And once we fill up our storage, we still end up with excess supply. On the right side, we have scenario two. Next. You can see our base supplies are less than demand. Next. So we pull water from storage, but we didn't have enough, so we end up with a supply shortfall. And the model is keeping track of all these excess supplies and supply shortfalls in every time step, so every month. It compiles the results for each month into annual totals and then summarizes the results over all the hydrologic sequences into statistical summaries in the form of a probability exceedance curve for supply shortfalls and surpluses. And then, how you allocate supplies to meet demands have different rules depending on what year type we think we're in, if it's wet, normal, or dry. And then how we allocate excess supplies into storage also depends on some rules on how we want to distribute water in storage to maximize our ability to use these banking programs in the future when we have droughts. So all of that is embedded into the program. Next, please. What I'm going to do now is just, I think, these are distinctions from the old models, so I wanted to present them. There might be, a bit of details, but the first is I want to show how allocation of supplies are made to meet demands. In the old model, we used to have a sequential manner in how we used our supplies. We always used them in the same order. But here, next, please, we have first priority supplies. These are firm supplies. Typically, our demands are higher than these firm supplies, so we are always using them. Next. And these supplies are available every year. The next are second priority supplies. The order in which we use them changes with every time step based on a calculated projected end of year Article 56 value. I will talk about this in more detail in the next few slides. Oh, sorry, next, yeah. And then next, please. Third priority is using Rosedale Rio Bravo, which has no expiration. It's just, it expires when we've had a lifetime fill of 200,000 acre feet. So we want to use that program as a last resort to preserve it. It's like our insurance policy. We want to prioritize it over flex because we want to access it as soon as we can, as we determine we need these additional supplies and while we have that take capacity. Next. So finally, we use Castaic Flex, which is locally available, and we want to use it under very stressed conditions. Next, please. So as I said, those second priority supplies, the order in which we use them is based on some calculation of what we project to be the end of year Article 56 carryover storage in San Luis Reservoir. Next. So the next slides just focus on these second priority supplies, which are determined through the management of Article 56 carryover in San Luis. The ability to manage Article 56 carryover provides the agency with additional storage, but comes with the risk of spill. Article 56 is a flexible and powerful storage, and it determines our excess and how we manage our other programs. We have targets that we set. Next. So we assume we can never store more than a certain maximum value. And that's, again, user input. It's not hard-coded. Next. We have a user input, which is a minimum target storage. It's something we'd like to have in stored in St. Louis at any time. Next. We have a maximum target storage. So based on where what we project the end of year value for Article 56, you know, based on these three parameters, we make decisions on how we use our water supplies. Do we use State Water Project first, or do we start pumping from our banking programs first, and so on? Next, please. So, so this in case one. We are projecting that our end of year carryover storage is above that maximum target, which means we are likely in surplus conditions or a wet year. So in that type of year, we would prioritize using state water supplies first to meet demand, and then we would send surplus water to Flex and then our banking and exchange programs. Next. So I mentioned earlier that how we store surplus supplies is also based on certain rules. Next. So we would always prioritize returning any borrowed water to Flex. Next. And then water to Rosedale, Rio Bravo. Next is Semi-Tropic and any other banking programs we might have in the future. And as I mentioned earlier, these decisions are based on maximizing the life of each banking program. And then finally, we would send to exchange programs or to we would enter into sales agreements. Next. So case two, next. We're projecting the end of year Article 56 carryover balance to be between the minimum and maximum target storage. So we would prioritize using state water project supplies first to meet demand. Then we would return any borrowed water to Flex. But in this case, we wouldn't put any water into our banking and exchange programs, and we wouldn't take water out. So we would just try to manage our supplies or, you know, meet our demands just through our firm supplies and the state water project supplies. Next. So third, that's case number three, where, you know, we are in dry conditions. So we're projecting end of year carryover to be below that minimum target storage. And so this means that we probably don't have enough water from our firm supplies and Table A entitlement to achieve our Article 56 target storage. So we want to pump water from our banks and exchange programs this year to end the year with a minimum balance, the minimum target balance in St. Louis. This isn't always possible. We can have a year where existing shortages are severe that even drafting all our banks and exchange programs will not give us our minimum storage in St. Louis. Next, please. When we are in case three, you know, in very stressed conditions or maybe just a dry year, we also allocate supplies a certain way to meet demand. So we would first start with all our banking and exchange programs. Next, except for Rosedale, like I said, we try to preserve Rosedale. We use it next, followed by our state water project supplies and then our Flex. You know, one reason to start taking from our banks first is that we are constrained by the withdrawal capacity each month from these banking programs. So we want to ensure we have access to these as soon as we think we need them. We don't want to wait till the end of the year and not be able to access all our storage. Next, please. Like I mentioned before at the beginning, I have two scenarios to present. And these scenarios are not what, you know, are not definitive planning scenarios. They were created for illustrative purposes, you know, for this presentation in general. And it's really to show what, the model functionalities and how we can look at our results and compare and contrast different decisions we make. So they are not, you know, real scenarios. Just keep that in mind, please. And what I have here is a table that is showing all the scenario, all the different programs that are being simulated in each scenario. So anything with a cross in yellow means, you know, it's the it's being simulated. Anything in light green is not simulated. And so what you can see here is that we are not simulating in any of the scenarios, dry year, Saugus 3, Saugus 12, 3 through 8. We are using the last delivery capability report, which is from 2021, in the preliminary scenario, which is that first column on the left. We are not simulating the management of Article 56 carryover. To be conservative, we're not simulating the semi-tropic NLF program because there's uncertainty around that. We're also not simulating the Rosedale-Rio Bravo expanded withdrawal capacity and no Rosedale-Rio Bravo exchange program. And this bottom line just shows the High Desert AVAC bank in the first two scenarios, the prelim and the base scenarios. Their AVAC is not part of it, but then what we call scenario one, that's where we simulate AVAC. What I want to say is that the, you know, the names of the scenarios, this preliminary one was created just so that I can show with this new model how the benefits of managing Article 56. So the prelim is going to be presented today, but in the future, we won't have any prelim scenario. Our base scenario will be basically our portfolio with the management of Article 56. So I'm going to compare the prelim with the base, and then scenario one is just comparing against a base scenario as we begin to add programs. Just one other thing regarding the maximum and minimum targets for Article 56 in San Luis. I performed a sensitivity analysis on the minimum and maximum targets, and based on expert judgment, selected a minimum target of 5,000 acre feet and a maximum target of 15,000 acre feet. Next, please. And I have here assumptions and initial conditions for our existing programs using the beginning of 2024 as the beginning of my simulation. And then the standard parameters that were provided in the AVAC for the AVAC programs. So the maximum storage, annual put and take capacity, losses, and so on. Next. So I'm showing here the same table. Next, please. And so in this scenario, like I said, these are comparative results. And I want to just show the value of having access to storage in San Luis Reservoir. So I'm comparing the preliminary scenario that does not manage Article 56 and the base scenario that manages Article 56 in San Luis. Everything else is the same. Next, please. So the graph here, this I'm showing just a summary of our final reliability results for selected demand years into the future. The blue bars are the results of the preliminary scenario where we're not simulating Article 56, and the orange simulates Article 56. And so you can see that we have an improvement in our water supply reliability when we are able to manage Article 56. It essentially serves as a buffer and increases the reliability of our base supplies. Next, please. And here you can see in the, you know, the hashed graphs show that improvement in reliability over the preliminary case. Next. So next, please. Again, it's the same table, but this time I'm comparing the base scenario with scenario one. So the base only simulates the management of Article 56. And with Scenario 1, I layer on AVAC as a potential banking program. Next. Again, just a reminder of what these parameters are for the AVAC banking program. Next. And again, here I'm showing summary results of our reliability, final reliability numbers. The orange bars show the base scenario with Article 56, and the gray bars show Scenario 1 with Article 56 and with AVAC. Next, please. You can see that additional storage, just having access to additional storage, that's not new supplies, increases reliability, especially during extended periods of drought. So you can see the value of that program. Next. So in summary, SCV Water now has a running water supply reliability model with several improvements. We use a monthly time step. We have complex rules on the management of Article 56 carryover and rules on banking program fills and takes. We have access to and management of Article 56 carryover storage serves as a buffer between dry and wet years and improves our reliability by at least 10%. And preliminary AVAC evaluations demonstrate the value of additional storage for improving reliability. So AVAC improves reliability by more than 15% by 2050. And then next, please. Yeah, one more. I just want to say that I use those default parameters provided to us in the AVAC agreement, but I did do, you know, additional runs to see if we increase the total storage of AVAC available to us or the ability to, have higher withdrawal capacities or fill capacities, how that could change results. And one of the constraining factors that I found for filling AVAC was that was the availability of surplus water upon realization of increased demands in our service area. So as we progressed in time and our demands increased, what constrains the ability to increase reliability further is just excess water. Next, please. So we can now begin to assess the need of the need and value of other projects inside and outside the service area, such as investment in the Delta Conveyance Program, investment in Sites Reservoir, which would be a new water source, investments in Saugus dry year wells, development of local groundwater recharge and recovery, new conservation measures, and investments in new banking programs. Together with other tools, we can evaluate the consequences of alternate local groundwater management and recycled water management scenarios in a much more comprehensive way. We can begin to look at, the value of storage, the value of refined operating strategies, and interaction with environmental flows in the Santa Clara River. And we can now answer questions that you may have in a quantitative way. Thank you.
Thank you, Najwa. Need to ask if we have any public comment, April?
We do not.
All right. Open it up for questions from the board. Director Bronstein.
Thank you so much for this presentation. This was fascinating. I have a few questions that I was trying to jot down as you were talking. So how was this program built? Did we program it or create it ourselves? That's amazing. I think that's really cool. And I just want to point that out, that our staff managed to we had a need and this is really cool.
Thank you.
So thank you guys so much. So how long does it take to run a scenario?
less than a minute.
Okay. So it's like one of those where you can just kind of sit around and play around all day long. And so I'm guessing that it's also very customizable. Like we can play with our groundwater, our wells, how many wells, if a well's off, if contaminant.
Yes, yeah. What takes time is just interpretation of results and understanding why you're getting certain results, you know, and this provides insights. Is it the input, you know, is it just our demands or the groundwater pumping, or is it based more on the assumptions, you know, that I described, you know, and how we're, yeah, prioritizing the use of supplies. And yeah, so to get that insight requires a bit of time, you know, synthesizing the results.
I mean, I just love it. I love how it allows us to be so much more flexible and have foresight and use things more in a more effective way. I mean, I think this is amazing. It's great. And my only, I guess my, I had another little question about, I think it was on slide 6 where we said, you said that you can quantitatively assess and compare values. Like, I'm guessing that that has to do with the input and not like.
So here, let's say we want to decide between participating in AVAC or investing in local Saugus wells, for instance, our local groundwater. We now have, you know, we can run the model with just AVAC. We can run the model with just the Saugus and compare the results and see what is this added benefit. Are we, you know, when usually when we really need something is in the extended droughts, are we getting that benefit or is it the same? And it's really, the results are different just in a normal year when, you know, it's not the greatest benefit. So we can compare that against the cost for these programs as well and then be able to make more informed decisions.
Yeah, I think it's the cost that I was a little bit curious about too, because often we get stuff and it's like, we don't know how to compare, like,
yeah,
how much is this water actually costing in with all the other bells and whistles that are usually, you know, attached to it as well. So this is great. Thank you guys. This is amazing.
Yeah. So the cost would be like a post-processing. It's not built within the model, but the model provides you with the results to allow you to put a cost, a meaningful cost to, you know, per acre foot or so on.
Well, thank you so much.
Director Colley.
So just a little confused. We've been participating in the San Luis Article 56 program, I think, for as long as I've been on the board. Have we not?
Yes.
So I'm trying to figure out how we've been using that water, managing that water without this model. This model didn't create that capability. It, I guess, was the assertion of the model that if we stopped using that we would reduce the reliability by 10%. Is that effectively what you told us?
Yeah. So the old model that we used to use for our long-term planning, so the MBK model, the Excel-based, did not simulate the value of managing Article 56 in San Luis. And it's what you said now that we are able to simulate it, we can see the impact if we didn't have that storage available to us anymore. So yeah, in a way, yeah.
So the model didn't invent this or create Article 56 water or anything.
No, we didn't create, but the assumptions on how to, you know, so it helps us, for instance, narrow down what is that target storage we'd like to have in Article. We didn't have ability, you know, it was based more on experience in the past. So now we can more, you know, narrow it down because, you know, storing in San Luis is very beneficial, but it comes with a risk of spill, right? If we are followed by a wet year, we would have foregone storing some of that water in our banking programs that are not at a risk of spill. That we might, you know, incur some costs and losses like 10%, but we know we have that water available to us the next year and, you know, to a certain extent. But with San Luis, it's that, you know, we're kind of not gambling, but
yeah, I understand. You know, I understand the risk of spill,
so
for certain.
Now we can begin to
this year, you know, we kind of learned that in spades, right?
Yeah.
We kind of shocked at the the speed at which things could change.
So it can help us, you know, with making these decisions. Should we store in San Luis, or should we maybe fill, you know, evacuate some of that water and put it in our banking programs? We didn't have that, you know, ability to quantitatively, you know, simulate and help us, you know, manage our portfolio.
So in your brief discussion here with another director, it was the first time I heard finances mentioned in any of this. And it you said basically there's nothing in this model that that models any of the financial considerations, which troubles me, because if we're taking water out of a bank where we could be taking our San Luis water, that taking the San Luis water is very inexpensive. Taking water out of a bank, which you're going to have to replace in the in and out, we typically pay a fair amount of money for that. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do we ensure that this model doesn't help drive us to more expensive operations than need be? I understand you did say that, and I understand that we sometimes have constraints on how fast we can get our water out of a bank, and we've invested quite a bit of money in trying to fix that problem in some cases. But I'm just trying to figure out, how does this model help us minimize cost? Because if cost was not a factor, we could have any reliability we wanted. We could get to 99.9999% reliability if we were willing to spend $1 billion. So I'm trying to figure out how this model will help us
with that
balance between cost and reliability.
So I think there are several, questions you asked. Yeah. The first, in terms of, you know, taking water from our banks versus San Luis or our, you know, Table A supplies, our strategy is to always use Table A in San Luis. But what the model is doing is trying, you know, every time step, it's looking at conditions of all our, of the status of all our supplies, plus what the allocation is, right, which changes every month until May when you get the final allocation. So we don't want to end up, you know, waiting till the last minute where we realize we need to pump our banks. And that's where we will prioritize pumping our banks first. So we're not prioritizing it when, you know, in wet and normal years. So that minimizes, you know, the use of our banks until we really know. So, you know, the ability to quantify that in a way reduces the use of these banks and ultimately the cost, you know, of operating these banks. Now, when we want to compare different investment choices, so sites or AVAC or, you know, DCP, the model output, you know, providing, you know, a certain amount of water or reliability in certain years or certain sequences of years will be used with cost equations, you know, that's post-processed, and that now we can quantify again the value of each program, you know, dollar per acre foot and so on. And I agree with you, you know, we can try. I mean, as an example, I mentioned, you know, I played with AVAC where I put unrealistic parameters, like I increased storage to 150,000 acre feet, you know, put intakes to 50,000 acre feet, and really you begin to see diminishing returns. So the model also helps us look at that, you know, what's the marginal benefit from, you know, exceeding a certain parameter or a threshold. So it does help with all that. But, you know, like I said to Director Bronstein, some of it is, you know, interpretation and post-processing, you know, synthesis of the results and understanding what is causing, you know,
the results that we're seeing.
And then just one final question. I assume that the model uses a Monte Carlo approach to past years' hydrology.
Yeah, it's not randomly, you know, selecting because the delivery, you know, the data we get from the delivery capability reports, right, from DWR is already run through an operational model, you know, and that operational model has built-in assumptions on, you know, capacity of the pump stations, you know, regulatory criteria to meet salinity requirements in the delta and so on, right? So that's CalSim, but then, so that's the operational model, but input to the operational model is a hydrologic model, which is where you could use, you know, the random Monte Carlo analysis. So because it's a downstream, you know, a downstream model we're using, we have to maintain the sequencing. So it goes through every sequence, but not randomly. So for instance, if we started our hydrology in 1922, and we ran a 30-year simulation, we would end in 1952. The next sequence would be 1923. So you would shift it by one, right? 1923 through 1953. And so it goes through the sequential hydrology.
Okay, I think I understand that. I think I like that better because it the Monte Carlo method assumes a cross correlation of zero, and that's not the case.
Yeah, because what I didn't mention is the antecedent conditions are very important. So if we ignore that, knowing that we're using downstream, right, a downstream model, we're using results from an operational model that's already considered that, you know, the antecedent was so important. Like, did we have a dry year before? You know, did we have a wet year? So to ignore that and just randomly sample would not provide accurate okay. results.
Sounds like an improvement over some of the things we've years ago gotten. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Vice President Ozahowski.
So this presentation was heard at the Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting more than once. If you look at page 6 of the presentation, it shows you kind of the front page graphic user interface of this model. But just to put all the directors at ease, your outputs are as good as your inputs. Ms. Pitwa, can you just briefly talk about the quality control in terms of, you know, the values that you entered and the parameters for those values of all of our sources of water in this model? What kind of a quality control did you and what did your team do to make sure that it's as close to reality as possible?
Okay, so I think there's also two questions in here.
Sure.
One is, in terms of just pure inputs, are we using, for instance, the latest demand forecast or the latest groundwater pumping
capacities, right?
Schedule, yeah. So this, you know, we coordinate internally. We check, you know, whether it's Sarah Fleury or, you know, Matt Dickens or operations. Make sure, you know, we know the, for instance, the production capacity of the wells, you know, how they stage them over time. So, for instance, if we were simulating SOGAS 3 through 8, right, they have a schedule when they come online. And sometimes they change, so we're always checking on that. Now, in terms of the actual model results being correct, that's more involved. I've had help from a consultant where I provide. Well, there's two parts. One is just doing mass balance. You know, we check mass balance. It's got to be zero. You know, you're. So, I've been automating that, so that we don't need to do manual checks. But then in the interim, we had also a second set of eyes, someone just testing different scenarios. First, also testing different programs and elements. So like individual elements, not looking at the bigger program. So for instance, we know AVAC or let's say semi-tropic has a certain amount it can store, certain amounts you can withdraw every month, and certain amounts you can put every month, right? So we would check that and make sure we're never exceeding that maximum storage, or we're never exceeding that maximum take capacity and so on. But then the entire portfolio and how it's working with all these rules was also checked manually. So check, you know, and compared against what the model is spitting out.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Buffon. Back to you, President Martin.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. And I do want to say thank you to the Water Resources Committee for bringing this so that the full board can hear this important information, because I think it's really, really valuable for us to hear this. And thank you, Dr. Pitwa, for the really great presentation. I don't have questions. I'm just a couple comments. And I just want to say that I think that having this in-house expertise in Dr. Pitwa and her team, using tools that you just explained to us, that's very specific to just our agency, is so highly valuable. And, you know, I appreciate the investment that is being made in doing this high level analysis. Again, just specific for our area, using our data. And so I just want to say, I look forward to continuing to learn as you learn more. And, you know, the practical application of all of this is really helpful to management. And then us, the board, when we are asked to make some really costly decisions when it comes time for new opportunities and, you know, additional water resources. So it's so extremely important. And I appreciate the time that you're taking to explain to us the process that you go through, because I think that's really helpful for, again, when we're at those decision-making points. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Vice President Goodsite.
Just one question. Can you explain how we go from a different, like, I understand the supply difference based on the inputs in certain years, but how do you get a percent reliability out of that? Like, what is causing that number? Is that clear enough?
Yeah, I have an extra slide.
Okay.
April, if you don't mind, I think it. I don't know if it's a bonus.
It's the emergency backup slide.
It's, I think, the first extra slide. I don't remember. I haven't. Okay. So if you remember the example I gave with the bar charts, you know, in just very simply speaking, it was one time step. So in 1 month, right? I'm running 30-year simulations. So from 2024 through 2054. And then for each future demand year, right? Because that's what we plan for. Like, let's say we want to look at 2025 or 2030. So we can plot these graphs for each individual future demand year. And how you get to these graphs is that these bar, you know, the bar chart that I showed, the example of taking water and putting water into storage, you first of all summarize for the entire year, if you had any supply shortfall or surplus. And then you're running each one of these years. You know, the hydrology is, it's what Director Colley said, you know, it's not Monte Carlo, but it's the sequential analysis. So I'm running it through 94 different sequences of hydrology. And so these 94 sequences will produce annual results of surplus and shortfall. And so then they are summarized into statistical summary. And so when I showed results of the scenarios, I just showed where that, you know, black line crosses the horizontal axis. So it shows you the final, you know, when it becomes negative, that's your reliability.
That was a great explanation. And if I may, I said one question, but I actually have another. How are you modeling regulatory changes. This one continues to concern me. Like, you know, we know today there's certain regulations and certain expectations of conservation, but that seems like that continues to get more strict, which would actually reduce demand a little bit. How is that being modeled? Because it's a little less certain.
So when we begin to bring, forward scenarios and decisions for the board to make, we will define scenarios. And I hope you can also help us, you know, if you're interested in a certain scenario. So we can either make up scenarios if we want to be risk averse, you know, and say, we can do both, right? We can say our demand is going to increase by 10% or decrease, for instance. So we can change that input in the model. When it comes to state water projects, the delivery capability report is updated every 2 years to reflect changes in regulations, you know, in the Delta, or, include the latest climate change science. And so that's, you know, we do that as soon as we get the new DCR results that's input in. And then we can also create scenarios, for instance, if we think we have a risk of, not getting permits for certain wells in our groundwater basin. So we can turn off some of these wells or reduce the production from them and simulate and see what the impacts are.
And thank you for that reminder. And I think that goes back to, I had a conversation with Steve and Dirk a long time ago when this first came out. And I mean, that goes to the board is going to have to decide how much risk we're willing to take, because some of these things we just don't know.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there could be an earthquake, or there could be some really extreme regulations that hamper our abilities. And then we would just have to choose to aim for a higher reliability to account for potential unknowns. But that again comes at a cost. So I know it can't model everything, and we're going to have to make some decisions.
And, you know, also the other thing, DWR used to publish, you know, the DCR, the delivery capability report, based on a central median climate change projection. And so this new, the 2023 DCR is going to have different, risk-informed scenarios, they call them. So, you know, a 5% exceedance, which is super conservative, the 50%, might be 35%. So you can expect, as we bring in things forward, you know, for your input and direction, you're going to be seeing more than one, I want to call it, you know, risk-informed scenario plus, you know, different scenarios, scenario assumptions, like you mentioned before, based on regulations, for instance. So what we're hoping to do is be able to present this information in such a manner that you can easily compare and contrast. If you wanted the agency to plan for the 35th percent, scenario, what are the cost implications? What are the benefits? What are our different pathways to achieving reliability versus if we continued planning for the 50th percentile? So yeah, we want to present it in the easiest possible manner for you to make a decision.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Seeing none, this is an informational item. There's no action to be taken. We thank you very much for bringing this to the full board. It's very interesting. Thank you. We can move to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Cole is sitting in for our general manager, who's on well-deserved vacation. Mr. Cole.
Yes, thank you, President Martin. Just want to thank Najwa for presenting tonight. I think at the Water Resources Committee, I know we were talking about, let's make sure we pick a night that we have some time to get into this a little bit. So appreciate all the questions. We're kind of at the beginning of a process here, and we're going to be doing a lot more refinement, and having somebody with Najwa's skill sets on staff, as Director Armitage was pointing out, is a huge benefit. And I think we're all learning a lot from that engagement. So thank you. Just a few items. Tomorrow, I'm going to be going up to Sacramento to take part in the Delta Conveyance Partners Workshop. So that's a workshop that we're going to get a full update on the status of the Delta Conveyance plan and how that's going. Cost updates, I believe, are going to be presented. That will provide us some information we're going to bring back and share with the board and update you all on that. You may have seen some news on Sites Reservoir. There's quite a few things going on. One of the big ones, Senate Bill 149 was something the governor had pushed forward in this last session that dealt with CEQA streamlining. Mostly around judicial review and periods of judicial review as it applies to CEQA. The Sites project applied through that process, and it was announced this week that they were certified to do that. So that's good news to keep that project moving forward as expeditiously as possible. The CEQA document will be up for the board's consideration next Friday. So I will be going up for that vote as well. So that's a big day in the Sites project where the environmental document is going to be up for consideration of approval by the board. Water Academy, we've kicked off the Water Academy. We had a couple of board members there. I think, again, we saw a great mixture of the community that wanted to participate and is participating. We gave a little bit more time in each session this time around. I think that worked out perfectly because we were just at the clock this last one. So feel free to attend one of those if you want to see what's going on and get to engage with some of the community members that are showing interest in to learn about water. And the final thing I wanted to share, our outreach department received five PRISM awards from the Public Relations Society of America's Los Angeles chapter. We received the top prize for the Drought Ready SCV campaign, the Water Currents Public Newsletter, and the Pipeline Employee Newsletter. The 2023 Consumer Confidence Report earned second place. And the Drought Ready SCV was also named the best in community relations, taking the top award across all industries. So it was a banner year for the outreach department. So I just wanted to thank Kevin and the team for all that they've do for that. And I was joking with Kevin today, somehow he made the 51 most influential list, but our general manager didn't. So we were having a good laugh at that. So congrats to Kevin on that as well. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. And again, I'm sure our board threw their applause, offers their congratulations to Kevin and the staff as well. I saw a number of times on social media and weighed in on it. So great work, guys. So have any public comment on Mr. Stone's report?
We do not.
Very good. Do you have any other comments or discussion from the board? Seeing none, we can move on to item 9, committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. There were two reports included in your packet. Are there any public comments before we consider director comments?
We do not.
No public comments. Any director questions or input? Seeing none, we can move to item 10, written reports for informational purposes only. There are four of these reports included in your packet, as well as the committee planning calendars. Are there any public comments on the item 10 reports?
There is not.
Very good. Any discussion or questions, or Director Armitage?
Thank you. For the Finance Administration and Information Tech Services section report, I just wanted to Once again, share my appreciation for the efforts being made by the IT department to keep up on cybersecurity issues. Then I saw the mention that they went to a conference that was attended by, it was an international conference, but also included FBI, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, and others. So it just, it always makes me feel better knowing that we are just keeping at the forefront of cybersecurity. So I just want to shout out to them. Thank you for that. And then in the Water Resources and Outreach section report, there was the note that staff had done a presentation on water resources management at CSUN. And I always get excited when we have any connection with our students, either in elementary or high school or higher education. So that was really cool to read. So thank you for that. And I think lastly, or two more comments. Well, I was just going to also say congratulations to the communications team on their award that they received in relation to the work done in the multifamily apartments. I feel like the conservation programs that that individual residents can take through their homes, what, you know, they take the initiative to do that, but I think it's a little harder to do outreach and reach the people in the multifamily residential facilities and in the apartments. So, you know, I feel like this getting recognized for this type of program is really cool and really important. So thank you to the team for that as well. And in addition to the other five that Mr. Cole just mentioned. And then lastly, the note about a staff meeting with the City of Santa Clarita staff to develop data sharing processes and protocols for model water efficient landscaping ordinance procedures. And I think that was mentioned previously, but I wasn't sure if you were mentioning that was going to happen and it finally did happen. But I, and you know, you've heard me say this many times before, but I think it's such an important collaborative effort between the city and agency staff to become active partners in maximizing awareness about and implementation of water conservation strategies as we continue to build more housing in the valley. So I think these are really, really key conversations and a great partnership to have. So just thank you again for mentioning that. And I always appreciate hearing about anything new on that forefront. So thank you.
Very good. Any other questions or discussion from the board? Very good. We can move to, let's see, we have, that was item 10. We have any, we can move to item 11, President's Report. I have update the board on a number of meetings outside the agency conferences and events. The Aqua 2023 Fall Conference in Indian Wells is November 28 to 30 this year, coming up this month. Urban Water Institute Spring Conference in Palm Springs is February 21 to 23, 2024. Please check your emails for upcoming additional events. Upcoming board meetings, the November 21st and December 5th board meetings will be in this room at 6 p.m. Upcoming committee meetings held at the Summit Circle ESS boardroom at 5:30. That's the November 8th Water Resources, the November 16th Public Outreach, and the December 7th Engineering and Operations. Upcoming committee meetings at Rio Vista in the boardroom at 5:30 will be the November 20 Finance and Administration. A few other informational items for the board. For each, at each of your spots is the SCV Water Holiday Party invitation. Please turn in your RSVP no later than November 30, 2023. And this is the first in-person holiday party in how many? Four years now since COVID hit. So please, if you can attend, please do. Are there any public comments, April, on the report?
There is not.
Any questions from the board on what we reported on? Seeing none, we can move to item 12, AB 1234 reports. There were two reports, thank you, Maria, that were posted to the SCV Water website and sent out via email. Are there any additional AB 1234 reports tonight? Director Bronstein.
I apologize for not writing mine up, but I also attended on October 23rd, Hart High School ribbon cutting for the water bottle refill station. And I have to say that my favorite part about it is that there's a little counter there, so kids can actually go and see how many water bottles they fill. And I think that that's a great way to encourage people, because when they see that they're making a difference, and when they can see and they can quantify what they're doing and that it does, you know, change something, they're more encouraged to do it. And I think Director Orzechowski has requested on previous times that we have our fill stations at events to be able to quantify as well how many water bottles are we saving. And I think that that would be a great effort and something that we can be sharing about how are we actually saving water, you know, water bottles. And I'd like to see that happen, you know, every time we do it, because again, people feel better when they know that they're actually making a difference. It helps incentivize them.
Director, Vice President Orzechowski.
Just to piggyback on Director Bronstein, I believe we already have flow meters on during events at Central Park, and they're running. That's my knowledge, Mr. Cole. Is that right?
I would have to follow up. We definitely have the meters, the meters that are monitoring the park's water usage, which would capture this, but it would be a very small amount on those meters. I would have to follow up on the actual bottle refill station to understand if that has a sub meter on it to count.
All right. I spoke with staff at the Touch a Truck event, and I believe that we do have that.
Okay.
And just want to make sure that's being reported during the public outreach committee meetings.
Okay. We can, yeah, definitely follow up on it.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Bronstein.
Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. I've got a couple to report. October 16th and the 19th, I had Aqua Executive Board Committee assignments that we're working on. On the 24th, we had the Region 8 committee nominations completed, and those were all Zoom calls. And then on the 26th, the State of the City. That's all.
Very good. Director Armitage.
Thank you. On October 18th, I attended the Executive Committee of the Special District Association of North Los Angeles County virtually. To debrief from our last general membership meeting and discuss plans for the next general membership meeting and also continue drafting the strategic plan. And then similarly to Director Bronstein, I also attended the celebration of the water station at Hart High School. And, you know, again, love collaborating with schools, just a great project to encourage hydration and more importantly, reduce single-use plastics that create all kinds of problems. So I hope we can continue these types of projects. And one of the things that was kind of a side discussion there was perhaps the ability to donate some reusable water bottles to some of the, I guess, the schools that we end up having the refill stations at for the students who maybe can't afford a refillable water bottle as an idea. So anyhow, it was really fun. I always love working with schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Any other 80-12-34s? Way at the end, Director Marks.
Director Marks, can you please turn on your microphone?
Thank you, April. It's on October 26th. I also participate in the State of the City meeting at the Indian Country Community Center. And October 22nd through 25th, I participate in the CSGA Leadership Academy at Santa Rosa. I'll be submitting a written report on that, but I did want to comment that it was very enlightening and encouraging to see that we were already practicing many of the best practices when it came to strategic planning and review of the general manager and financial reporting.
Thank you, Director Marks. All right. I do have a quick one. I apologize for not doing this in writing beforehand. On October 19th, I attended the regular Delta Conveyance Authority Board meeting held by Zoom in this boardroom. We've made arrangements to attend remotely when necessary. So I appreciate April and Jonathan and the IT staff setting up and allowing it to happen in this boardroom. Not quite ready to travel, but almost. The regular meeting was preceded by a closed session to discuss two items as agendized related to personnel matters. The meeting continued in open session, and a few of the items, key items that were discussed, we approved the meeting minutes from the August 17th board meeting. Executive Director Graham Bradner presented his monthly report. The final environmental document will be released at the end of this year. There was a discussion on the programmatic governance update. And the objective of this program is to ensure that program management policies and procedures align with DCA requirements as the teams proceed through program initiation and the delivery phases. The four areas of inquiry, as they were characterized, program quality management, health and safety, risk management, and the project management office structure optimization. There were 35 total program management programs, plans that were developed. There were 26 priority, and of that, 16 were characterized as top priority. Regular staff reports were also provided, including general counsel, the treasurer, and the DWR environmental manager's report. The general counsel reported that SB 537, which was going to provide another means for attendance by elected officials at board meetings that did not make it through. Not sure if it's a two-year bill or whether it just got vetoed. I'm not sure, but it didn't make it. So we are left with what we have. And that concludes the 19th. On the 26th, I also attended the State of the City event with our couple of colleagues from our board here at the Canyon Country Activity Center. It was, as usual, a very informative and entertaining program. That concludes my report. And I believe that concludes the AB 1234 reports. And I will ask, are there any public comments on our reports?
There is not.
Very good. Item 13, director reports. Are there any director reports tonight? Looking out. Vice President Ozahaski.
Yeah, I just want to say, Mr. Cole, Mr. Abercrombie, thank you for participating in that Touch a Truck event at Central Park. Thank you for sending Michael with the SCV crane truck there. Big hit. By the time we left, there was a huge line to operate that crane. So thank you for participating in these events. I think it's important that we have a connection with our ratepayers at these events. I think it speaks volume of our participation with our community. So thank you for doing that. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. Any other director? Director Armitage.
Thank you. I also have some words of gratitude I wanted to share. First, I just wanted to say thank you to one of the staff who was so great with customers that the customers took the time to write a very nice and super detailed letter of thanks that was passed on to us. So I just want to say to Mr. Sean Lopez, thank you for the fantastic service that you provided to those customers. I think we all know how great our staff is, but it's really nice to still get confirmation of that from time to time in those types of letters. So that was really nice to see. So please pass on our thanks to him. I also want to say thank you to everybody who has been working to keep the replacement of the Dickinson Pipeline project, to keep that from impacting the Valencia High School, all the schools in that area. I know there's been a lot of back and forth communication about that, and I drive by there multiple times a day, and I'm actually amazed at how smoothly that is going, and I have not seen any impact whatsoever from that. So thank you so much for working with the various school programs that have requested consideration to make sure that they're not impacted. And again, I know a lot of back and forth has gone. So thank you to the team who's been handling that. So the city of Santa Clarita has a really fantastic rain barrel program where they offer low cost rain barrels to city residents. And I decided to take advantage of that and learn how the process goes firsthand. So this last go around, I ordered my rain barrels and then I showed up on the day that you're supposed to show up and pick them up. And I have to say, I'm so impressed with how smooth that process ran as well. You know, you pick up your rain barrels and then they offer a class where a great educator teaches you how to set them up and answers all your questions. And during that time, when I went to the class, I had met a number of people there and had some fun conversations. And one of the gentlemen that I talked to there, he ended up reaching out to me afterwards and saying, okay, help me get a rebate now. And so, you know, the agency offers a rebate for rain barrels. So I said, all right. So I tried to help. I wasn't super successful. So I want to say a big thank you to Matt Dickens and Siobhan Halushka for following up and making sure that that customer was able and to get his rebate. And I also benefited from that as well. So it's a great program. I hope we can continue to promote it together, you know, in the future going forward. So, and then just want to say that I was one of the directors along with President Martin, who was able to sit in on the last Water Academy day one class. And I just want to say, I appreciate that you all allowing the directors to sit in on that. And it was really fun because that was the one class I missed last time around. I wasn't able to be there the first time and hear the introductions and kind of why people are interested in being in the class. It was really neat to sit and listen to that and get to learn about the people who are interested in our local water. And I have to say, it's a fun group. And super talented. I mean, you could put together a whole band. There's so many musicians. I don't know what the correlation is between water and music, but pretty fun. So anyhow, thank you, everybody.
Very good. Thank you, Director Armitage. I think that concludes director reports tonight. Do we have any public comment, April?
We do not.
Very good. That brings us to closed session. We will now be going into closed session. The public may stay on the Zoom webinar. Any board members or staff that are connected to the Zoom and are in closed session, please disconnect from Zoom. We will meet in closed session to discuss item 14.1. Members of the public and any staff may stay on the current line. And once closed session is over, the board will reconnect to the Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and the remaining items on the agenda. We will now be taking a brief 5-minute break. Let's get back at least by 7:45. We are now going into closed session. We are in recess. We are now back in open session and we'll move to item 50, closed session announcements. Mr. Bunn.
President Martin, members of the board met in closed session to discuss the real property transaction listed in the agenda, and no reportable action was taken.
Thank you very much. We can move to item 16, director request for approval for future event attendance. Are there any requests for future event attendance? Seeing none, we can move to item 17, which is adjournment. We are hereby adjourned. Thank you all. Have a good evening.